Well, I think the late 2000s give a pretty clear parallel to the current path. Myanmar's generals had held on to power after cracking down in 1988 against nationwide protests, holding elections on their terms in 1990, which they then refused to acknowledge the results of. There were protests throughout the 90s and international criticism. But in the 2000s, Myanmar's generals began to signal a willingness to pursue what they called a roadmap to disciplined, flourishing democracy. And at the time, ASEAN, or the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, had been pressuring Myanmar to reform and open up to the world and become a better, more responsible stakeholder within their community. And the United States, of course, and other Western governments had lobbied and pressured Myanmar's junta to change away from its dark path and the human rights atrocities that it had committed for decades. But Myanmar's generals were also sticking to their roadmap to disciplined flourishing democracy and refusing to budge on ASEAN's terms. But, you know, I think one case that offered some insights into Myanmar's tolerance for pressure and willingness to adapt was the 2008 Cyclone Nargis, which killed hundreds of thousands and displaced more in the country. At the time, ASEAN had been pressuring Myanmar to open up to the world and accept humanitarian assistance. And in this case, ASEAN was successful in allowing in international aid in conjunction with the United Nations. So that's one example I would point to as a success story in the past that we could perhaps look to going forward.
Now, was it just ASEAN and other international partners, as well as the natural disaster, that really tipped the scale in terms of creating that fledgling democracy in Myanmar? Or was there more domestic pressure put on the military leaders to turn that corner?
Well, the 2007 Saffron Revolution certainly exposed the unpopularity of the regime and the deep discontent across the country. So that started to get the ball rolling from within Myanmar. And the generals had put forward that year this roadmap or plan to transition to manage democracy on their terms. But Myanmar wasn't willing to budge to ASEAN and didn't show much sign of actual change until they were able to proceed with their path on their terms, dictate the terms of the 2008 Constitution, which enshrined the role of the military. And then their engagement with ASEAN did expand after that. But I think it shows two things, that Myanmar and the generals in particular are very reluctant to accept outside criticism. And if anything, it sort of pushes them into further stubbornness. But at the same time, it shows that there is prospect for change if this is managed in a multilateral sense with other stakeholders.
So, Hunter, as someone who is aware of Myanmar's past and has been watching the events unfold closely in Myanmar since that February 1st coup, what are some of the things that you're keeping an eye on as indicators as to what may take place next?
Well, a few things. I'm watching to see how much international traction the committee representing the Pidongsuh Lutha, or the CRPH, what people are calling a shadow government, the elected leadership gets internationally, and how much it's able to provide basic services within the country to, in a sense, say we are the legitimate representative body of the Myanmar people, and we're delivering governance at a local level. They've already set up medical centers to account for striking hospital staff that have left their jobs. And it'll be essential to show that they're capable of managing the country. Another component I'm looking closely at is the role of ethnic armed groups and the decisions they make in coming days and weeks to side with the protest movement or not. Some so far have voiced support for the protest movement and said that if the military continues to kill civilians, that they will take a more active stance. Some have sort of sat that fight out so far. But if all of them combined opposed the military and actually engaged in armed conflict once again with the military, and these conflicts have gone on for decades off and on, but if they were to erupt simultaneously, that would put an enormous degree of pressure on the junta to probably pursue some form of negotiated settlement. And A third factor is how long the strikes and protests can continue within the country and whether they're able to sustain hope of a democratic transition.